From South Los Angeles to Washington, D.C., and many points in between, this is Political Talk on AnnenbergRadio.org and NeonTommy.com. I'm Max Schwartz, along with Katie Gregg and Jenna DeKnight. Without further ado, let's get started. On this week's broadcast, Jenna will be giving the wrap-up. I apologize for being off 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, we had spring break, and after that, we had a holiday. The budget saga continues in Washington, and there does not appear to be an ending in the coming days or even the coming weeks. The Republicans have proposed their budget in the House, led by Budget Committee Chair Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, and the Democrats have proposed their budget in the Senate, led by Budget Committee Chair Patty Murray of Washington. There seems to be a great divide. The Republicans want to repeal the Affordable Care Act and continue giving relatively low tax rates to higher-income Americans. Republicans also want additional spending cuts, even though the White House reports that discretionary spending is already at its lowest point since FDR's presidency. Here's what House Budget Committee Chair Paul Ryan of Wisconsin had to say about his party's budget.
Mr. Chairman, today I rise to bring forward and present the budget resolution for fiscal year 2014. We believe that we owe the American people a responsible, balanced budget, and that is precisely what we are bringing to the floor today. Our budget balances the budget within 10 years, and it does so without raising taxes. Balancing the budget will help us foster a healthier economy. It'll help us create jobs.
Audio courtesy of C-SPAN. On the other hand, the Democrats want the Affordable Care Act to remain law, arguing that it will bring down health care costs in the future and that it reduces the national deficit. The Democrats want to close tax loopholes on large corporations and on the wealthiest Americans. This is Senate Budget Committee Chair Patty Murray of Washington.
The budget reflects the pro-growth, pro-middle-class agenda that the American people went to the polls and supported last November. Our budget is built on three principles. Number one, we need to protect our fragile economic recovery, we need to create jobs, and we need to invest in long-term growth. Number two, we need to tackle our deficit and debt fairly and responsibly. And number three, we need to keep the promises we've made as a nation to our seniors, to our families, and to our communities.
Audio courtesy of C-SPAN. The one budget that is not talked about as much is the Progressive Caucus's budget. According to its website, their budget gets rid of the country's deficit and brings in enough revenue to make a $31 billion surplus in 10 years. The president has to propose a budget of his own. On Thursday, during the press briefing, Principal Deputy Press Secretary Josh Earnest said the president's budget will be unveiled on April 10th. People have said that we need spending cuts. As I mentioned, the Republican Party wants that. What is your feeling on the spending cuts, given what the White House has reported?
Well, you know, especially since we had so many spending cuts recently, I don't exactly know how I feel about that, just because what would be being cut, do you know?
And a lot of people want to cut the Affordable Care Act, which is very interesting. I don't think anyone has ever seen anything like it, where one party tries to cut another party's signature platform after it's been ratified by the voters. Of course, they want to cut Medicare and Social Security. That's their main talking point. But it's interesting. On Bill Maher, they had their real-time reporter go to New Jersey and talk to people about what they wanted to cut. When she went through the list of what is possibly to be cut, the people had no answers for everything. So they want government to be cut, but they don't know exactly what to cut.
Yeah, I think that would be the issue. I mean, because ideally maybe spending cuts would be something good, but it's just hard to say, you know, what they should come out of, especially because we've cut so much recently.
Mm-hmm. And I do want to bring up one more point before we move on to talk about North Korea. And that is that I think the lack of notoriety for the Progressive Caucus's budget really says something about our American system, and that the two parties dominate. The two parties dominate, and so do their caucuses. So that makes a statement about our democratic system when compared to Europe.
Yeah.
Here is Katie to talk about North Korea.
North Korea carried out a long-range rocket launch in December, and just last month, it held an underground nuclear test. In response to these tests, the UN placed sanctions on Pyongyang. In response to the sanctions, North Korea's leader, Kim Jong-un, approved a plan to put rockets on standby and ready to fire at U.S. targets. These rockets are facing both mainland and certain military bases, threatening South Korea and Japan. Kim and his regime have released many threats in the past weeks, threatening to, quote, mercilessly strike the U.S. mainland, their stronghold, their military bases, and the operational theaters in the Pacific, including Hawaii and Guam, and those in South Korea, end quote, if the U.S. were to provoke North Korea. Why might Kim be acting in such a reckless and erratic manner? Some believe it is to make him appear credible on the world stage, but because the country is so secret, we may never know. So, first of all, I wanted to ask, what do you guys think about this tactic? Do you think that Kim Jong-un might be trying to prove himself, and do you think this is successful for him?
I personally think that he's doing this to make himself look credible on the world stage, as we'll talk about later in the wrap-up. But it's very interesting because he's providing this these threats, but no one really knows. I'm sure the U.S. government has some insight, but no one outside the U.S. government or the North Korean government actually knows whether their threats are credible. I think that's the biggest issue. And today, with more fighter jets going over there to be on static display in South Korea, that just adds fuel to the fire.
Well, yeah, and a lot of people, because they don't really know if Kim Jong-un is credible, they kind of question whether these threats are even, you know, if we should feel threatened at all. So do you think that an attack is possible, or, you know, is he just all talk?
Well, an attack is certainly possible. It's just a matter of what he wants to attack. They certainly don't have the capabilities at this point to what everyone else in the world believes to reach the U.S. mainland. They obviously have the power to attack South Korea if they choose. They've done that before.
And why not the mainland?
They don't have the rocket technology
to reach that far.
They can reach U.S. targets on foreign countries like Japan and South Korea and possibly even Guam. Our bases on Guam, Guam, but who knows where else they can reach.
Okay, so these tests they've conducted haven't proven that they could reach U.S. mainland.
Not exactly, but it proves that their weapon technology is improving.
It's just not advanced enough. Yeah.
Okay.
As Max mentioned, the budget questions are just starting to surface. The White House last week quietly unveiled details of President Obama's plans to further shrink the federal deficit by $1.8 trillion. The Obama administration's blueprint is expected to be the backbone of April 10th's fiscal year 2014 budget request. It proposes trimming future Pentagon spending by only $100 billion in 10 years, $400 billion less than that mandated under the sequester. Obama and his top aides are reaching out to rank-and-file Republicans in the Senate, believing that starting talks toward a grand bargain to avoid the sequester. As Katie mentioned, there is military movement within the top-secret country of North Korea. The White House has reinforced its support to allies South Korea and Japan if North Korea does strike. North Korea warned Seoul on Saturday that the Korean Peninsula had entered a state of war and threatened to shut down a border factory complex that served as the last major symbol of cooperation between the Koreas. The White House has stressed the U.S. government's capability and willingness to defend itself and its allies and interests in the region.
Now it is time for 1 Minute Spotlight. Dean Wilson served on the board of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, or CPB, for 10 years. Now, after being off the board since 2011, President Obama has nominated his successor, Jeanette Lake Dates. I had the opportunity to sit down with Dean Wilson to discuss his tenure on the CPB board.
So what do you believe was your biggest achievement while on the board?
Well, I was on for 10 years, and it took me a while to... It's a very complicated system, as you can see. Mm-hmm. And so it took me a while to figure out what were the important issues.
So is it your job to dole out the money? Is that what the board...
Pretty much, you know, and a lot of it is determined. We don't have discretion because Congress says you get 3/4 of it to TV and 1/4 of it to radio. But we have some discretion in deciding who gets what money, in et cetera, et cetera. So I think the things I'm proudest of, there are a couple of them. One is that it was clear to me that, as it was to, you know, most people, that the media was going through a very stark, radical transition. And that, as with many government institutions, public broadcasting was moving perhaps too slowly to take advantage, for example, of the digital revolution.
Yeah.
You know, it's a corporation for public broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And what we talked about, I didn't get a chance to complete this on my term, but I think it should be changed to the Corporation for Public Media, because that's the way that your generation is certainly consuming a lot of information and entertainment, not just on either a computer screen, but a television screen, mm-hmm. or a radio in the traditional sense. So I came up with what I called and supported the 3 Ds.
Okay.
One was digital, because the whole public broadcasting system needed to think in a more digital way. They tended to think of it as from one to many. In other words, you have one broadcaster and they go out in one direction to you and your colleagues. Well, the digital world is much more interactive. Mm-hmm. And you have to think in terms of interactivity, not just in terms of looking at something in one direction. You look at Downton Abbey, which is a great show, I like it, or mm-hmm. Listen to the Car Guide. People want to interact with their media.
Yeah.
So I said we needed digital. Secondly, we needed more dialogue. I think that my analysis is that public broadcasting had gotten kind of insular, mm-hmm. and it was talking to itself.
Yeah.
And it wasn't talking to people in Silicon Valley, or it wasn't talking to people in L.A., about the new content, about new technologies, about new ways of thinking about the world, new business models. Mm-hmm. So we needed digital, and we needed
It's 6 o'clock.
We also needed diversity, because if you look at a lot of the TV shows or listen to a lot of the radio programs, mm-hmm. it doesn't have a lot of Latino content, mm-hmm. Latino-targeted content.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of Asian-targeted content. There are not a lot of shows that are especially by and about women, and there were not a lot of shows about or content produced about African Americans. So it's not the idea that the women shows will only be listened to by women, or the Asian shows will only be listened to.
You want to make it appeal to a various range of audiences,
right.
rather than the white male.
Right, but it was very much of a white male orientation historically, as it has been. In other media, but because we don't have the Nielsen ratings to mm-hmm. respond, we could keep it kind of at arm's length. Big Bird is kind of diverse. I mean, he's a bird. So.
But the programs are diverse. Those can appeal to
Yeah, they are. They are. And that's really a good example of what I mean by diversity. So as the chairman of the board and working with my CEO, I said, if this is public money that we're getting from the Congress, that we should insist that all of the people that we give money to have to increase their dialogue, increase their commitment to digital technologies and new technologies, and increase their commitment to diversity.
The Annenberg line continues on the board of the CPB with the renomination of Bruce M. Rayner. He is a member of the USC Board of Trustees and a member of the Board of Counselors for the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
As many of you might remember, the British student Meredith Kircher was murdered in the Italian apartment that she shared with Amanda Knox in 2007. After Kircher's death, Knox and her then-boyfriend, Raffaele Sollecito, were accused of stabbing Kircher to death. Both Knox and Sollecito were found guilty and sentenced to over 20 years in prison, but were then acquitted after serving 4 years behind bars. The Court of Cassation, the highest court in Italy, recently requested to retry Knox. Italian law, however, cannot force her to return to Italy, but she can be tried in absentia. Knox, who is currently a student in Seattle, believes wholeheartedly, as does her lawyer, that her acquittal will be upheld.
President Obama was in Florida this past weekend to promote investment in infrastructure, but it was clear that he had basketball on his mind. Obama stirred up a Miami crowd, boasting that his hometown, the Chicago Bulls, ended the Miami Heat's winning streak on Wednesday. The Bulls beat Miami 101-97. The Heat's run became the second longest streak in NBA history, falling 6 wins short of the record 33 wins set by the 1971-72 Los Angeles Lakers. The president then shifted to college basketball by praising the Florida college basketball team, who made it into the March Madness tournament. He discussed both the Miami Hurricanes and Florida Gulf Coast University, the team that has been the story of the tournament. Obama said, quote, "Let's face it, Florida is the center of basketball right now," end quote. In basketball, the team that is expected to win does not always come out victorious, which is why they play the game. The same can be said about the budget. We will not know which budget will prevail until the votes take place.
Thank you for listening to Political Talk. We would like to thank Joel Zink, our engineer, Willis Seidenberg, the Annenberg Radio News faculty advisor, and Aaron Schrenk, the Annenberg Radio News executive producer, for all of their help. The music used on today's program has been composed, recorded, and provided by Eric Schwartz. He is on the web at www.ericschwartz.com. From the Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism at the University of Southern California,
I'm Katie Gregg.
I'm Jenna Tonight.
And I'm Max Schwartz. Have a great week. We hope to have you back next week. In the meantime, we can be reached at politicaltalkpodcast@gmail.com and on Twitter by using the hashtag politicaltalkpodcast.
Woo!